never took her eyes off me. I figured the best thing was to keep the conversation going, even if it was a little one-sided. "Have you seen Bernard or Sheriff Schaefer? They were here a few minutes ago and said they would be right back."
"I didn't mean to do it."
"I know, Annie. They told me." I raised my hands just to show her I didn't mean any harm. "Sometimes we do things that we feel sorry about afterward. I've done things I wish I hadn't done, honest." Her eyes unfocused as she looked up at the last remaining light bulb, and I thought that I might be getting through to her. It was in that instant that she moved rattlesnake fast and swung the knife straight for the bulb. I jumped back as it shattered, leaving us there in the dark. I heard a noise again, and I was sure she was closer, but with the limited light behind me, I could only guess where. It was probably slipping on the damp, smooth concrete floor that saved me. She thrust the butcher knife past my abdomen as I fell against the far wall and scrambled backward as she advanced, swinging it at me again. I could hear the sound of the blade as it sliced the air. Retreating to the cage door, I stumbled through and reached for the gate, but she was too fast and slashed at the chain link, the sparks flying off as I yanked my hand away. I stumbled for the next gate and had just closed my hands on it when I felt something catch and rip down my back, but I ignored it and swung the gate shut. The lock cylinder was turned, said that it was open, and I didn't have a key, but lodged my boot against the bottom as she threw herself against it with a scream that sounded like a hyena. At maybe 100 pounds, she bounced off the thing a few times and then screamed again. She stood there on the other side, breathing hard and looking at me. "Annie, you need to stop this." She lunged at the gate again, this time noticing that it bowed out in the middle, then lowered her head to look at my boot, just on the other side. "Oh, hell!" I yanked my foot away as she dropped to the ground and jammed the knife through the chain link, barely missing my toes. Grabbing the top of the gate, I held it shut with one hand as she stood and pushed the knife through the middle, missing the front of my jacket by inches. I thought I'd hit on a method of holding her at bay when she fainted to the bottom and then swung at my fingers at the top again. The knife scraped across my knuckles, and I was forced to yank my hand away just as she threw herself into the partially open gate. I unzipped my horsehide jacket and slipped it off, draping it from my left hand. I backed away as she approached again. "Annie, I don't want to hurt you, but I will." Swinging the jacket, I wrapped it around my arm and got ready to make a move on a woman less than half my size. I figured if I got my wrapped arm between us, I'd just use all the training I'd had at USC against those 1,000-pound blocking sleds. It might kill her, but I didn't figure I had any choice.
"Annie?"
We both heard the voice behind me, but I didn't dare turn.
"Annie, you need to not hurt him."
She stood still.
"You don't want to hurt anybody, Annie, I know that. You didn't mean to do it before, right?"
She turned.
"I... did you?"
Her head shifted like the carriage on a typewriter, stuttering, starting, and then still. He continued talking, his voice muffled from behind the heavy door.
"You need to stop attacking this man."
Her eyes came back to me, before looking down at the knife, which she regarded as if she'd never seen it before. She dropped it and then looked up as it rattled onto the floor.
"I didn't mean to do it."
She leaned against the wall and then slowly slid down to the floor, her hands in front of her, in a supplicating position, over top of her folded legs, almost as if a valve had opened and the air had left her. Taking a step forward, I towed the blade, spun the handle around, and picked it up. She stared at the floor and ignored me as I stood and backed away, stuffing the knife in my belt and looking at the still open trap in the heavy door, where I saw a battered, scabbed pair of hands clutched together in a prayer.
It's a rock.
As the head of the Wyoming Department of Criminal Investigations Lab, is that your expert opinion?
Pretty much.
T.J. Sherwin held Exhibit A out to me.
It's a river rock, if that helps, from, say, a river. I can call up the state geologist and get a second opinion, but I think he's going to agree with me that it's a rock.
I turned and looked at Henry and then at Vic, who was covering her face to keep from laughing.
You know, that's the problem with modern law enforcement, rampant smartassism.
I turned back to look at TJ, still holding the clue.
What can you tell me about the writing?
She studied it. It's English, and I think a black marker was used.
Not permanent?
Unable to hold back, Vic joined in.
What is these days?
TJ shrugged, her head dropping to one side in disbelief.
What do you want from me, Walt? Rocks don't make for good fingerprinting. And even if we got a marginal print, it's going to be a needle in a haystack.
She looked at the softball-sized stone again.
You want a handwriting analysis on two words in block print?
I don't suppose you've seen anything like this before.
She snapped a finger and pointed it at me.
Oh, yeah, now that you mention it. There's a serial windshield smasher that's been running around the state doing just this type of dastardly deed.
She gestured at the sample.
And this right here is the one piece of evidence that we needed to put together a lineup. We were thinking of calling in Dwayne the Rock Johnson, or maybe Kid Rock. How about Chris Rock or Rock Hudson? He's dead. See? We're narrowing the field already.
Vic grunted. Rocky Marciano? Rocky Colavito? Rocky Blyer?
I dismissed her with a glance. You're not helping.
TJ handed the rock back to me.
No, there have been no other cases such as this. It's groundbreaking, actually.
Not funny.
She shrugged again and walked us down the hallway toward the front offices and the main entrance of the converted supermarket that served as DCI headquarters.
You're under a lot of pressure lately.
A little.
I read the article in today's paper.
She suddenly smiled.
Did you really threaten to kick Mike Barr's ass?
Not in so many words.
I glanced at the bear, who had headed for the parking lot and was now leaning on the bullet's grill guard, his face turned toward the sun like an Aztec's. I think I actually threatened him with the Cheyenne Nation. She glanced around as we crossed the reception area to the door. She opened it and looked out at the gorgeous day.
I'm sorry, Walt. Realistically, there just isn't anything I can do.
I clutched my rock and gave the head of Wyoming's DCI a one-armed hug just to show there were no hard feelings.
I'll see you around.
She pointed at the evidence. If I hear anything, I'll let you know. She smiled.
I'll call Vic's cell phone.
I waved her away. Go back to your lab and smell some more toxic fumes.
When we got to the bullet, the bear had finished worshipping the sun and was sweeping more glass from the passenger side seat.
Where to now?
I opened the back door and let Vic in. I'm thinking the scene of the crime. I brushed a few more shards off my seat, and then the windshield replacement shop on Old Lincoln Highway. I pulled into the alley behind Katie's and parked as both Vic and the Cheyenne Nation gave me a questioning look.
I need to see a neighbor.
I shut the door behind me and, cradling the rock, walked over to the yard that was adjacent to the carriage house, but the three rather uninviting garage doors that faced the street were closed. The garden shed was one of those prefabricated metal buildings that had seen better days, as had the property on which it stood. It sat next to a power pole on a little L-shaped portion of land, a weed-festooned tract that I was betting neither landowner knew that they possessed, and consequently one that no one cared for. There was a wooden fence that reached to about chest height, but a few slats were loose, which could allow a person to slip through. There was a shopping cart parked on the other side, so I was pretty sure the occupant was home.
Hey, Peter?
There was no answer.
Peter, I know you're in there because your shopping cart is out here.
After a moment, the homeless guy appeared. He wouldn't make eye contact with me.
I don't know nothing about your windshield.
Vic laughed, and I glanced at the bear, who smiled and held an eyebrow in abeyance.
Well, seeing as how I didn't ask you about my windshield, and yet you just volunteered the subject, I believe you might indeed know something about it.
He looked puzzled.
Huh?
I gestured behind me at the shattered glass.
Because you knew something happened to my windshield.
He continued to peer at me from around the corner of the tiny building.
You're trying to trick me.
Vic shook her head.
We don't have to, dumbass. You already tricked yourself.
I don't understand.
She sighed, and I decided to start over.
Hey, Peter, do you know how a rock went through my windshield?
He glanced around to make sure that no one would overhear.
Maybe it fell off something?
I tipped my hat back and rested my forehead on one of my arms. Come over here to the fence.
No.
I raised my face and looked at him, and gestured toward the Cheyenne Nation now standing beside me. I'm tired, and don't want to climb over this fence. So if you don't, I'm going to send him after you. I then gestured toward Vic. Or have her shoot you. Slowly, the vagrant came around the tin building and drew closer.
It was a dude.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
He was just standing here in the alley?
Yeah.
Did he have a car?
Yeah.
I don't suppose you got the license number, type of car?
Not really.
Desperate, I threw out another question.
Color? He was white.
I meant the car.
Black.
Okay, then, what did he look like?
Like a dude.
He was driving, so he was older than 16?
Yeah.
I sighed again. A lot older than 16?
No.
20s?
Maybe.
I glanced at Henry. Do you mind taking over? This is wearing me out. He caught the man by the front of his shirt and pulled him to the fence, his face now about 4 inches from Henry's.
What did he look like?
The words came tumbling out.
Blonde. He was blonde and buff, you know, like a bodybuilder. T-shirt and jeans with a leather jacket. It was an SUV. Black. Definitely black.
The bear turned to look at me, and I nodded, at which point he released his grip and Peter backed away, running into the shed.
I'm calling the police.
If I thought you had a phone, I'd take that threat more seriously.
I watched as they secured Annie Wells on a gurney and hauled her away.
You almost got me killed. Sorry about that.
John Schaefer leaned against the wall and lit a cigarette.
There was an uproar in the mess. We had to close it off, and I guess she got around us. She's got a knack for it.
I handed him the blade. What about the knife?
She's got a knack for that, too.
He examined it and then handed it to Bernard.
Seen that one before?
The guard studied it.
Nope, but I don't frequent the kitchen, and I'm assuming that's where it came from.
Might be something you ought to know.
Schaefer turned and walked through the cage toward the stairwell.
You coming?
I started after him and then stopped to look back at the cell behind me, and at the set of hands still folded in the small opening. I walked back over to the door and kneeled down, taking one of the hands in my own.
Thank you.
There was no answer, but after a brief squeeze of my hand, I watched as he withdrew both into the cell. I stood and remained there for a moment before turning and walking past Schaefer, leaving a hole in the trail of cigarette smoke that occupied the dank hallway.
Let's go.
Collecting my things at the reception area, I went out to the Plymouth and leaned my back against my ticket to freedom. I could see the asylum graveyard across the highway, but I was no longer worried about the individuals buried under the stark, numbered cobblestones. Rather, about those who were buried alive in the catacombs of the hospital.
I'll drive to the train station. You can drop me off.
Schaefer patted the roof of the sedan.
Then she's all yours.
I tossed him the keys and, dropping my duffel into the back, opened the door and climbed in. Schaefer started the beast, turned the wheel, and navigated to the exit. He studied me from the corner of his eye and finally spoke as we drove through the gate.
Sorry about that.
No big deal. He nodded.
Didn't get to spend much time with my brother, but I guess you did.
I was silent.
What did he have to say?
I placed a hand on the dash and looked out the window at the town of Evanston. We didn't have a lot of time to talk.
How's he doing?
I turned and rested an arm on the back of the seat, giving him a nice, lengthy look. How do you think he's doing? Schaefer studied me for a moment more and then burst out laughing, barely keeping the car on the road as he wiped the tears from his eyes.
I was just wondering if his story had gotten any more believable, and hey, I guess I got my answer, huh?
He chuckled a bit more as he cut across the road and swung into the depot parking lot where the Western Star sat waiting.
We both got out,
but he hadn't noticed that I was carrying the duffel in my left hand. "Here you go," he tossed the keys toward me, and I caught them with my right. "I filled her up before I got you, so she's full of gas and ready to go." I stood there for a moment, and then looked at the great steam engine working its breath up with a long pull back across Wyoming. I tossed the keys in the air once, caught them, and then casually slung them onto the top of the car. As they slid toward Schaefer, I threw my duffel onto my shoulder and began walking toward the train. "Won't be needing them." He called after me, "Hey, hey, hey, you don't want the Plymouth?" I didn't answer, and continued down the side of the train toward the sleeper cars. "Are we going to have the pleasure of your company, after all?" I looked back and could see John Saunders, the engineer, hanging an elbow from the cab window and looking down at me. "Until Cheyenne. For another 6.5 hours, I'm guessing." He glanced at his wristwatch and looked doubtful. "We don't get moving, and it might be longer than that. There's a front coming in, and if it hits before we get to Elk Mountain, we're going to be spending a cold night on the tracks." I nodded and kept going, noticing that most of the sheriffs I passed were still hungover. I finally found the one I was looking for, standing on the steps to our sleeper car as if he hadn't moved since I'd left. He was stuffing the bowl of his pipe, but paused to cock an eyebrow at me.
"Change your mind?"
I stopped, set my shoulders, and looked up at him. "Do you like mysteries, Lucian?" He struck a match on the surface of the Pullman, lit the old briarwood pipe, and looked down at me, the flame highlighting his face with an infernal glow.
"No, I do not."
"Neither do I." I looked up and down the tracks. "You gotta promise me something."
"What's that?"
"Don't hold back information pertinent to a case and leave me in the dark again, ever." Smiling broadly, he puffed the pipe until it caught and then blew out the match and tossed it into the cinder bed of the rails.
"You bet."
I had a feeling, and not for the first time, that I'd just made a deal with the devil. Why are we in fucking Nebraska? Pine Bluffs, Wyoming, if you please. Looks like fucking Nebraska. The young woman who was living at Leland's daughter's address was here. She said she was his granddaughter. The bear unbuckled the seatbelt of the Mitsubishi rental car we'd gotten in Cheyenne as a temporary replacement for my disabled truck as I made the turn and pulled up in front of the small house, its driveway empty.
"Why would she throw a rock through your windshield?"
"That's not why we're here. We're here to see if she would testify to the fact that she suffered because of her grandfather's murder. I don't like being pushed." Henry climbed out the passenger side as I lowered the windows a little bit for dog, cut the engine, and reached back to flip the seat forward so Vic could escape the clown car. As we approached the front of the place, I noticed that the piano lessons sign wasn't in the window any longer. "I guess she's out of business." Both Vic and the bear looked at me. There was a sign in the window. He cruised past me and approached the front of the house, knocking on the frame of the screen door before casually opening the thing and trying the knob. Only an expert would have noticed how casually he placed his shoulder against the jamb and leveraged the locked door open with a little brute force. He nodded and waited for us to follow. Vic and I entered and glanced around at the empty living room. Henry walked toward what appeared to be the kitchen and looked at the empty rolls of packing tape, a broken pair of scissors, and a collection of old newspapers. There were a few unused boxes stacked against the wall and a couple of tattered towels on the floor, a layer of dust coating everything. I went in the other direction past the bathroom, where the plaster curtain lay in the tub along with a broken curtain rod. There were 2 bedrooms in the back, one with a couple of loose pieces of wood on the floor, which could have been used to support a mattress and a frame. "What were you hoping to find?" I turned to see Vic standing in the doorway.
"Her."
Henry squeezed past and walked to the single window in the back, stooping a little to look outside.
"Hmm.
What?"
"Dead crabgrass."
I stepped over to the light switch and flipped it on, but nothing happened. "Can I ask you something?"
"About the crabgrass?"
"No." I was about to ask when I heard a noise from out front.
Was that dog?
Vic glanced over her shoulder.
I think so.
I'd just begun moving back toward the front of the house. When I heard the front door opening, I stopped and gestured for Vic and Henry to step back and clear the view. I leaned in and could see the shadow of someone passing along the living room wall. Whoever it was didn't say anything, and I was getting a funny feeling about the whole thing when one of the floorboards in the bedroom creaked under my boot. I was just about to speak when a 12-gauge round traveled through the partition beside me, blowing a sizable hole in the wallboard. Throwing myself to the side, I snatched the Colt from my holster and looked back to see that Henry had flattened himself on the floor with fluttering pieces of sheetrock floating in the air around him. Vic already had her weapon out as I switched to the other side and leveled my .45 from a crouched position just as another round went through the wall where I'd been standing. Henry stayed where he was, and I was about to throw a few rounds back when I took a chance. Absaroka County Sheriff's Department, hold your fire! There was a long pause, and then a very shaky male voice responded, Who? The adrenaline was still coursing through me like an electric service line. Absaroka County Sheriff's Department, damn it! And I'm the Absaroka County Sheriff! Oh, shit! Why didn't you identify yourselves? Why didn't you identify yourself, especially before you started shooting? Who the hell are you, anyway?
Officer Louis Mittenbuehler, Pine Bluffs Police Department.
Hold your fire, Mittenbuehler. I watched as Vic helped the bear up. I'm not kidding. If you fire that howitzer one more time, I've got an undersheriff here who's going to start shooting back.
Right.
I could see his shadow again as I stepped into the hallway, and, with Henry following, moved into the back side of the living room, where a young man with a shaved head in black BDUs held a Remington shotgun at port arms.
Sorry about that, sir.
I reholstered the Colt and leaned into him. Whatever happened to knock and announce?
What?
Announcing your authority to the premises and then waiting a reasonable time before entering. He nodded.
Well, we got a phone call. Somebody said there were two individuals, a white man and woman, and
he glanced at Henry,
and a native, and that they'd broken into a house.
Vic shook her head.
I'm in uniform, you douche.
When did you get the call? We've been here only about 3 minutes. He stood up a little straighter.
About 2 minutes ago. We're in the top 5th percentile in response time nationwide.
What's your percentile on shooting people? I sighed. Sorry. It's all right. Our fault, too. We were kind of cowboying it. I gestured toward the road. I'm usually driving my unit, but somebody threw a rock through the windshield. We're looking for the woman who used to live here.
Mrs. Leland Delahunt?
He made a face.
I don't think she could lift a rock even when she was alive.
You knew Abigail Leland?
Leland Delahunt, sure. I took piano lessons from her growing up, but she died.
We're looking for the current resident, Pamela Delahunt.
Mrs. Leland Delahunt's daughter?
He looked somewhat confused and then volunteered,
Well, you're in luck. She's down at our office.
Chapter 13. Who threatened you? Pamela Delahunt sat in one of the Pine Bluffs Police Department office chairs, a hand over her face.
I thought I should report it, but now I just want to get out of here, okay?
Her truck was parked out front, with a horse trailer packed with her belongings attached.
I understand, but whoever is doing this shouldn't get away with it.
She shook her head.
It's not my problem anymore.
Maybe not, but it's still mine.
She took her hand away, and I could see that she'd been crying.
Just tell me what happened.
After you came by, there were phone calls. Mostly they were just silent hang-ups. But then they started saying things like I should keep my mouth shut, that if I wasn't careful, I'd be sorry.
She clutched her hands in her lap.
What are they talking about?
What else did he say?
Oh, that I'd better stick to piano lessons.
She laughed, a hollow sort of sound, and wiped her eyes.
So it was a man's voice?
Yes.
Young or old?
She thought about it.
In between, maybe.
I glanced up at Vic and Henry, but none of us had any ideas.
Did he have an accent? Anything about his voice that was distinctive?
Maybe a twang? He was angry.
Was it a landline or a cell phone? Was there any static?
I don't remember.
I sighed and leaned back in the chair, which let out a high-pitched squeal.
I'm afraid I may have gotten you into trouble by coming over here. I'm fighting a very public battle so that the man who killed your grandfather stays in prison.
He told you what?
I leaned against the upper bunk and, looking out the window, felt the shift as the train began pulling out from Evanston in the same direction as the east-traveling snow. It was almost as if the storm front had wedged itself under the back side of the steel wheels and was rolling them forward.